Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5. The game, we have a loaded show today. We got college baseball. Vandy wins. The Vols lose. We got Brady. Tom Brady firing missiles, and it feels like it's in the Titans' direction. We'll get to that. We are absolutely loaded. Vanderbilt, I think today is almost the most important game for Vanderbilt the entire run. If they win today, I think Vanderbilt's got a pretty good shot of winning the national championship. It is a big one today. It comes on right when we get off at 6 o'clock on ESPN. How's everybody doing today? Caroline Fenton is here. Hello, Caroline.
Hello, how are you? How was your Father's Day?
It was great. Ian, how are you? Happy Father's Day, Ian, is the only person applicable of celebrating that on this
show.
Thank
you very much. Very nice weekend. Thank you.
Okay, let me say this. First off the top, before we get to the baseball. This weekend, at one point, and you guys know me, I've got the TV that's got the multiple screens, and so I can watch two games at one time, or three games at one time, or four games at one time. But it was downstairs, and I was watching Vanderbilt, and then all of a sudden, I'm flipping over to basketball, and now I've got basketball on the TV. I've got Vandy baseball on my phone in extra innings, basketball right down to the wire between the Nets and the Bucks. Great game. Then yesterday, it's like, what do you want to watch? There's the NASCAR race. There's the U.S. Open. There was baseball. The Vols were playing in it. There was, I mean, I'm a Braves fan, so the Braves were on. Hockey. I mean, I got to say, there's a lot of bad things about COVID. And I don't want to sit back and pretend as if none of those bad things happened. But there are some things we're learning about COVID that are saying, hey, you know, maybe you can work from home a little bit more. Maybe you should get outside a little bit more. Maybe you should exercise a little bit more. And maybe these sports should push their seasons back a little bit so that we literally have nonstop sports action all year. In a normal year, basketball's over by now. Hockey's over by now. Baseball's close to being over by now. College baseball is close to being over by now. That being said, I'm not sure I really care about NASCAR or golf that much. Like, I didn't watch much of the golf yesterday. I was busy watching everything else. But it was fun. It was a fun weekend. So we'll start with this. We had two teams. Vanderbilt and Tennessee, 1-1, 1-lost. And it'd be easy to say Vanderbilt played great because they won, and the Vols were terrible because they lost. But that's not really true. You know, when the preseason rankings came out in college baseball, nobody thought about the Tennessee Volunteers. Everybody knew about Vanderbilt. Every year, Vanderbilt is one of the highest-ranked teams in the country, and it is because, just like in football, just like in basketball, Vanderbilt in baseball gets the best recruits. In football, Alabama gets the best recruits every year, and every year they start off preseason ranked number one, and sometimes, in case Clemson got better recruits, number two. In basketball, the teams that always get the best recruits usually find themselves a year or two later at the top of the polls. Just look at Gonzaga. And while Gonzaga's not Duke or Carolina or Kentucky, Jalen Suggs, one of the top recruits in the country. Vanderbilt, every year, is towards the top. Tennessee is recruiting well. And Tennessee has come a long way. And there are a lot of good things the Vol baseball program has done. And there's a lot of staying power with them. But neither side, in my opinion, played a good first game in the College World Series. In fact, this is what the College World Series will test about you, which is, can you win when you don't play well? Because the other team is going to give you their best shot. And unlike when you're playing Presbyterian in a regional, or you're playing Wright State in a regional, or you're playing a rundown LSU team in a super regional, these teams are freaking good. And they're good, and they're hot, and they're well-coached, and they're all of those things, and that's how they got to Omaha. Mississippi State, for example, played Texas. Texas maybe has the top ace in the College World Series, not named Kamar Rocker. And it was the pitching of Mississippi State that got it done. By the way, Mississippi State, Chris Lemonis, one of the better recruiters in the country. I know that because when I went to college, Chris Lemonis was the recruiting coordinator of a program that had never been to a super regional, and when he left, they had been to multiple College World Series. It's really hard to win in Omaha. So there's two separate games. There's Vanderbilt and there's the Vols. Vanderbilt did not play great baseball. In fact, Vanderbilt did not play what I would consider to be Vanderbilt baseball. They relied on the home run to get back into the game. That's not something we're used to from a Tim Corbin team, especially with the new bats. Kumar Rocker, the best pitcher probably in the country, went 5 2/3, and he gave up 3 earned, 5 total runs. Dominic Keegan, the best hitter on Vanderbilt's team. He has a 360 average. He hits in the third hole. He is the best player on their team. Had an error in the first inning that led to Arizona runs. Came up with the game on the line in the eighth inning, I believe. Came up with the game on the line in the 10th inning. And he had a terrible approach. And yet Vanderbilt still won. Vanderbilt still won because they took advantage of a pass ball by Arizona, turning that into an RBI single, the speed of Enrique Bradfield Jr. on first base was, I got to believe, the defining factor in the Carter Young home run that got them back in the game. When their closer, Nick Maldonado, couldn't get it done, they found a way. In comes Patrick Murphy. Boom, boom, boom. Vanderbilt did not get ace-like performance from Kumar Rocker. They did not get Dominic Keegan's All-American performance in Game 1. And yet, because they got success out of the 9-hole, because they got guys over, because they got timely hitting, because their speed put pressure on the other team's pitching, Vanderbilt prevailed. That's a really good Arizona team, by the way. A very good Arizona team. Like, I know Kumar Rocker, the one that sent him to the showers, the two-run homer. I know he laid it right there, belt high, in the strike zone. But that ball was at least 25 rows up. I've been to TD Ameritrade Park. I've been to the College World Series. It's hard to hit the ball out of the park there. He hit it about 25, 30 rows up. Arizona is a good team. Vanderbilt found a way. Then there's Tennessee. And when I look back at yesterday's game, I think, was Tennessee not ready for that kind of spotlight? Is Tennessee not equipped to win a game that kind of way? Tennessee, they tried. They were patient. They worked Abbott's pitch count up from Virginia. But in three separate occasions, when the game was either tied or they were down 1-0, and still a very close game, Tennessee had opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, and they didn't capitalize once. Runners first and third, nobody out in the first. Jake Rucker, maybe their best hitter, strike three. Drew Gilbert pops up to second. Evan Russell strikes out on 4 pitches. 2 runners left on base, 0-for-3 with runners in scoring position. In the fifth, in a one-run game, runners second and third after a sack bunt to get to the top of the order. Line out to second, ground out to short. 2 men left on base, 0-for-2 with runners in scoring position. Again, down by 1, runners first and second, nobody out in the sixth. You felt like at some point the Vols needed somebody to break through. Evan Russell with a fielder's choice, strike 3 looking, strikeout swinging. By the way, the strikeout swinging came when the count was at 1.2-0. The approach at the plate was not very good for Tennessee. They were 0-for-3 in that instance with runners in scoring position. The Vols were 0-of-8 with runners in scoring position before Virginia broke the game open. They had 4 strikeouts with runners in scoring position and 2 with less than 2 outs. That's not winning baseball. The difference is, though, Vanderbilt, and I will say, in all fairness, I think Vanderbilt played a better team. Vanderbilt got great performances from other people. When it wasn't Dominic Keegan, when it wasn't Kumar Rocker, they got a great performance out of Patrick Murphy out of the bullpen. They got a great performance from Gonzalez last night, or I should say Saturday night. Their 9-hole hitter. The speed of Enrique Bradfield Jr. led to a mistake that was belt high that Carter Young just deposited into the seats. There's no way. The College World Series is so hard. I hear hockey people all the time get on their soapbox and talk about how they think the Stanley Cup is the hardest trophy to win in all of sports. The College World Series is hard. And it's hard because it's unforgiving. This was something I tried to explain to Vol fans because they kept talking about, we're going to Omaha and we're going to win it. I'm like, whoa. Like, the College World Series is hard to win because you hear double elimination. So you think, okay, if it's double elimination, we lose the first game, get our house in order, let it fly. If Vanderbilt had lost, and boy, did they come close. If Vanderbilt had lost, I would feel the exact same way today that I would about the Vols, except Vanderbilt's got Jack Leiter that can pitch them in that second game. Tennessee does not. But, I mean, a loss in the first game of the College World Series is almost a death sentence. I heard the midday show today say, out of 40 teams that have lost that first game, 5 have gone on to win the title. Those are not great odds. So, again, Vanderbilt won because they got performances that were unlikely from guys that they were testing and they came through. Tennessee had their best hitters in key spots, in big at-bats, and they didn't come through. Notice Tennessee not at the top of the polls when it comes to preseason, when it comes to recruiting rankings, when it comes to what you really got to have in the postseason. You have to have good fundamentals. Just ask the Philadelphia 76ers, who, by the way, had the hardest time making a free throw. You got to have good coaching. We know Tim Corbin's been there. We know what he's capable of. And you've got to get good performances from guys you're not expecting. What Vanderbilt did on Saturday, playing well without an ace-like performance from Kamar Rocker, without a star-like effort from Dominic Keegan, what Vanderbilt did is what is the equivalent of what the Titans should have been able to do with Derrick Henry running for 60 yards. Somebody else has to step up. The Vols, not even their stars came through last night. And that's why I believe they're staring a death sentence now in the College World Series. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We're starting on Vandy and the Vols. Again, I don't think either side played great baseball. I felt in both games, outside of Virginia, because between Abbott, the pitcher, and the kid who hit the home run with the dad who had cancer, which, by the way, was a great story on Father's Day, outside of those two guys, I felt the nerves in the College World Series. I felt it in Dominic Keegan's error. I felt it in his at-bat late in the game. I felt it in Maldonado for Vanderbilt at the end. I felt it with Kamar Rocker. Kamar Rocker goes out and gives up 3 runs in the first inning. That is not Kamar Rocker. And look, this is a College World Series veteran. The nerves were real. I really felt it from Tennessee. I really felt it yesterday from the Vols, where I just felt like they were in such a rut. Once they got to the 5th inning, and they got the opportunity, and they absolutely blew it, I felt like you could tell they were digging themselves into a hole. They were going down the quicksand route. And then when Virginia blew the game open in the 7th, there was nothing they could do. Your reaction, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get Caroline's thoughts, Ian's thoughts. And then I've got a baseball thought here, which is my problem with the modern-day game of baseball, which is really more major league. But I think that it's right now hurting the Vols. I'll explain. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
I think to steal what I talked about with one of our wins was, I gather they kind of got a little momentum. It's easy to swing the bats when you're up and leading, especially as you get deeper into the game, you start to relax on offense. And so I think it contributed to more to their offense as opposed to us on defense. You know, Chad threw the ball really well. Like I said, at times there was a pitcher here or there that lacked conviction. That's going to pop up when you throw, you know, 75 pitches or so. And they did a good job of executing it on some of those pitches. But it definitely impacted the game. You know, there's a chance to throw a blow in the first inning, and then a couple other times. You don't really know how the game would have changed. But regardless, the narrative still would have been there was moments where we didn't play baseball the way that we need to, the way we're capable of, and also in the fashion that, that got us to be able to play in this stadium.
There you go. That was Tony Vitello basically recapping yesterday's loss, which was they just didn't play winning baseball. Now, as I said, Vanderbilt won, and I don't think they played the kind of baseball it's going to take for them to win the World Series. I mean, you cannot, and I want to put this on Rocker, because I think it's an easy narrative to say, well, Rocker got lit up, and they still found a way to win. Go Vandy. That's not, I mean, the approach that Dominic Keegan took at the plate in the 10th inning, where he goes up, all you got to do, anything to the outfield wins a game. And he check swings on the first pitch and hits the knob of the bat. And then is down on three pitches. That's your best hitter. That's one of the best players in the country. You can't win like that. Now Vanderbilt found a way, and that's good. But Tennessee, again, runners first and third, nobody out. Jake Rucker, strike three. Drew Gilbert, pop out. Can't win like that. And I will say this. We talked about this last week, and everybody just brushed it off. And the thing about teams and fans is very rarely can you get a team that doesn't really hear what their fan base is saying. The New England Patriots, when they had Brady and Belichick, were pretty good at this, which is the fans would just assume, oh, we're going to be in the AFC title game every year. Go on. But they couldn't operate like that. I kept hearing last week Tennessee fans talk about this as if, oh, yeah, we're going to the College World Series and we're going to win. Like, this is not a best of seven. This is a very unforgiving tournament, especially at this level. It's one thing if you lose to Valdosta State in the first round in the regional, and then you can come back through the loser's bracket playing a bunch of nobodies. This is the College World Series. You would get the number two team in the country tomorrow in Texas. So, one of the big things I think about this, though, is I wonder if they kind of fed into that with what the fans, you know, that kind of fan attitude of we're going to Omaha and we're going to win it. And if maybe that kind of led them mentally, you know, you start to nerve up a little bit. I think that happened to the Vols some. What was your reaction, Caroline?
And Tennessee fans had every single right to be that excited because it hasn't happened for a very long time. So going to Omaha is an accomplishment in its own. But let's not lose sight that once you get to Omaha, you have a whole new set of challenges and you have much tougher competition. Tennessee could have won that game. It was in their hands and they just let it fall out.
In their hands is a little, I'm a little skeptical of. Could they have gotten the lead early and it been a different game? Yes. Was it in their hands to win? I mean, Dominic Keegan having the bases loaded and I think either one out or nobody out in the 10th inning and striking out on three pitches. That's the game is in your hands. For the Vols, if they push across a couple of runs in the fifth, does that change? Do they for sure win the game? I don't know. But they were just feeble.
You just cannot leave men on base like that. You just cannot leave men on base like that. I mean, they, what, had nine guys stranded on third throughout the entire game? There's the game right there. That's a 9-6 win right there. So I think that Tennessee has the talent to go far in this tournament, but I think that this game one may have been a little bit of a shock. Maybe they needed to get a little bit of experience underneath themselves in order, because I think Tennessee very much so had the capability of winning that game. The talent to win that game just needed a loss to wake them up a little bit.
Well, I hate to say it, but I think they're done.
You think
so? I think that
after Texas?
I do not think you can win. I do not think you can win the College World Series losing the first game if you don't have by far the best roster there. And it is so hard. People do not understand this. So, and again, this is because college baseball, like I said this last week, Vanderbilt fans understood how hard the College World Series is. Vanderbilt fans understood how unforgiving, and I'm going to keep saying this, it is an unforgiving tournament. You make an error at a big spot, you leave eight runners on base when you're either tied or down by a run, you leave eight guys in scoring position, you strike out four times with runners in scoring position, two times with less than two outs. It is an unforgiving tournament. And I don't think the Vols have the depth, especially in the bullpen. I don't think they have the depth in order to get themselves out of the loser's bracket, because this is what it's going to involve. They're going to have to beat Texas, they're going to have to beat Virginia again, and they're going to have to beat Mississippi State twice.
Whew.
Like, that's not – so the idea of, to your point of, they needed a loss to wake them up, this is not a best of seven series. That is not how the College World Series works. Like, again, I would have said the same thing about Vanderbilt if Arizona had found a way to win the other night, and that is that it is a death sentence. I'll give you an example. My college roommate in 2013 was on a Louisville team that knocked off number one Vanderbilt in the Super Regional. They stole game one and they stole game two and they got out of here and maybe one of the best Vanderbilt teams ever to not get to the College World Series ended up staying at home. So they go to Omaha and just like the Vols, they were pumping their chest. They were excited. They thought, you know, this was our year and they got blitzed by Indiana in the first game, lost. Then they play an Oregon State team that had Michael Conforto on it. I think ended up getting to that to the final that year, and they lost the game like 18-1. And my buddy told me it felt like they packed up before they even unpacked. That is how fast your luck changes once you get to the College World Series. You have a week of everybody inflating your tires, everybody pumping you up, everything, and then you get to the College World Series, and it's like, oh crap, that was fast. Leave runners on in the first, leave them on in the fifth, leave them on in the sixth. Now you're staring the Texas Longhorns down. Wow, that was quick. It is an unforgiving tournament. In fact, the last time, and they kept bringing this up during the Vanderbilt game, that game went to extra innings. The last time that a team had won in extra innings, or a team at a College World Series game had gone to extra innings, it was Vanderbilt in 2014. They beat Texas. Do you know what happened to Vanderbilt in 2014? They won the national championship. Texas was really good. And I know because I covered that College World Series. I was in Omaha. And again, I was working at ESPN 680 in Louisville at the time. And I was there. In fact, I was in a suite that we kicked Roger Clemens out of. But at that College World Series, Louisville and Vanderbilt were equally matched. Now, Vanderbilt ended up winning the national title, but they were equally matched. Both teams had high-end first-rounders. Both teams had ace pitchers. I believe Carson Fulmer was the SEC Pitcher of the Year. Kyle Funkhauser was the ACC Pitcher of the Year. They had battled with each other. They were both national seeds. Vanderbilt had a big fourth inning in the first game, won the national title. Louisville was out in 25 minutes. Like, it is a death sentence to lose in that first game. So I hear you with the idea of, hey, the Vols' bats needed to wake up a little bit. You don't have time to wake up in the College World Series. This is waking up. Kamar Rocker gives up three runs in the first inning, and you find a way to win that game. That's waking up. So, I mean, I get it. And look, the Vols have defied the odds all year long. I don't think they have the pitching depth. And the other thing I worry about with Tennessee right now is in big moments, Evan Russell, fielder's choice, Jake Rucker, strike three, Drew Gilbert pop out to second. Big hitters. Evan Russell in the first inning. Strikeout on four pitches with runners at first and third. The heart of the order. That is what got Tennessee here. Hitting the ball out of the ballpark at Lindsey Nelson Stadium is what got the Vols here. And I said last week, it is hard to play long ball in Omaha. And I know Arizona did it, and I know Vandy hit a couple of bombs. Like, Vanderbilt's not going to homer their way to the national championship. They're going to get a good start from Jack Leiter today. They're going to need Patrick Riley to have a nice outing, you know, I would assume probably against NC State, to try to get them into that final if they can win this one. And then they are going to need their pitching to get them through because you can't play long ball. The way Virginia attacked Tennessee, I thought, is how you win in Omaha, which is good situational pitching, which Abbott from Virginia was dealing. Good situational pitching. Get yourself out of jams. You get a hanger. You deposit it in the first row of the seats. And then it was ball in the gap, ball, you know, in between two outfielders, solid contact on a line to the outfield. That's how you win in this tournament at TD Ameritrade. And that's not Tennessee's game. Tennessee's game is trying to hit the ball out of the park. And that's why I look at the Vols. And I don't, with Vanderbilt, and I told you that I felt, you know, in the week I flip-flopped and said, no, I feel better about Vanderbilt than I do Tennessee. And I picked Vanderbilt to win. I picked Tennessee to lose. With Vandy, I'm kind of 50-50 here. Because I think they're the best team in their side of the bracket, easily. the best team in their side of the bracket. And even though NC State, some way, somehow, pulled a rabbit out of their hat against Arkansas, the best team in the country, and took care of business in their first game, I still think Vanderbilt's a better team. I mean, Vanderbilt is a national seed. Vanderbilt has a top five draft choice pitching tonight, and I think their road's a little bit easier. Whereas Tennessee, I mean, I think their road is probably the easiest right now of anybody left in the tournament. Whereas for the Vols, honestly, it may be the hardest. Like, it may be the hardest road to get out through now that they're in the loser's bracket and they are a national seed having to play a higher national seed.
And to that point, Texas lost by one run last night.
And it struck out about 45 times.
Mississippi State had 21 strikeouts. 21 strikeouts, and Texas still only lost by one run. Now, a loss is a loss, and I don't like to look back at the score and say, oh, well, it was a close loss. But still, when you're looking at the game, looking at the challenge that Tennessee has ahead of them, that is a very good team.
Well, and now let me say this. Mississippi State's good.
Mississippi State is good.
I mean, Mississippi State's good. So, Mississippi State's good, and they're very well coached. And I would be very worried if I was a Vol fan. I mean, I think the Vols are dead. I mean, I know Tennessee fans are going to say, no, it's double elimination. This team, we believe. I get you. I think the Vols are dead. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get to your texts on this. We'll get your calls on it. But this is a baseball thing that drives me nuts. A baseball thing. And I think the Vols have so fallen victim to it. That's next. Stillman & Company, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. ESPN 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in Wednesday night, Nashville SC returns to Nissan Stadium to take on Toronto. Which, by the way, I got a buddy who plays for Toronto, so that'd be fun. Pre-game starts at 7:15 and the match is at 7:30 on ESPN 94.9. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game, or streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Clearly, we got beat today in a few different facets. Andrew Abbott was outstanding. Chad Dallas gave us a good start to things, too. But Abbott was in and out of the zone and clearly effective. I thought there were some moments there, whether it be on the mound or at the plate, where we lacked conviction, and it cost us a little bit. And then, you know, towards the end of the game, once the score wasn't the way we wanted, we kind of uncharacteristically, you know, I don't want to say rolled over is not the right word, but kind of lost our edge a little bit, which has been so beneficial to us. So Vol fans deserve better because I know they came out in big numbers and certainly have helped us get to this point too. But it wasn't like there wasn't some try hard out there and some preparation. If anything, maybe there was a little bit too much of that. And for all those fans that did watch, certainly not the happiest Father's Day for our crew, but it is Father's Day, so that'll be the next thing that everyone needs to celebrate in our locker room, and then we need to turn the page and have some good preparation tomorrow to prepare for Tuesday afternoon.
There you go. That was Tony Vitello, and while I do want to give Andrew Abbott credit, Andrew Abbott was 8-6 this year in the ACC. Andrew Abbott, Virginia starter, 16-13. And again, we've seen it time and time again, especially in baseball, where a guy is not having a good year and he goes out and lights somebody up in an LCS, in a World Series, in something like that. But I didn't think Andrew Abbott was the reason that the Vols didn't break through with their opportunities in the first, in the fifth, and in the sixth. Let me say this. I have an issue with baseball, and I'm a big baseball fan. Like, I really, truly am. College baseball, pro baseball, I can watch baseball. I can go to the Sounds and watch AAA baseball and enjoy myself without all the, you know, the nightclub in right field and the jumpies and the putting greens and all that kind of stuff and the beer and the liquor and the fireball. And I love all that stuff. But I can literally just watch a baseball game and get into it. But one thing that drives me nuts, and I think is really hurting the sport, is analytics have become a big deal in baseball. It has ruined baseball more so than any other sport. It's trying to ruin basketball, but I don't think it will. But it has ruined baseball. And the reason it's ruined baseball is because every at-bat now has one of three outcomes. Home run, ball four, strike three. That's it. Everybody goes up there and they try to hit the ball out of the ballpark, and they've got these special launch angles, and they are just every time. But when you do that, and you're not trying to go the other way and send the ball into left field on the second pitch. When you do that, you're going to have long games and a bunch of strikeouts. So I watched the Vols. Big at bats. Big at bats. Anybody ever try to go the other way last night? We see anybody ever try to, you know, just, hey, just try to make contact. Just solid contact. They did sack bunt at one point, but that was with the ninth place hitter. College baseball has the same issues the pros have. And I think the Vols are one of these teams that is trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark on every pitch. And it is amazing when you do it in a bandbox ballpark at Lindsey Nelson Stadium against a subpar LSU team on short rest because they went to a Monday night with Oregon. And so they're launching home runs left and right at home, and they're partying outside of the stadium in Knoxville, and they're thinking, yes, yes, this is our team. I keep going back to what I thought the biggest difference in the Vanderbilt game was. And that was after, I believe, a walk to Gonzalez, a passed ball, he goes to second, and Enrique Bradfield Jr. with a RBI single. And then with that Enrique Bradfield Jr. speed at first, clearly the Arizona pitcher was worried. I think the Arizona pitcher, they kept saying on the broadcast, his slider was his out pitch, but he was afraid to throw the slider because if Bradfield takes off, he throws the slider. Now the tying run's going to be at second. So he's just throwing Carter Young fastballs, and he lays a cookie right in there for Carter Young because he's so worried about Bradfield, and Young hits the ball out of the ballpark. That is baseball. That is how you play baseball. The idea of, hey, we're going to go up there every time, and we're going to swing for the fences with the launch angle, and we're going to hit the home run, and we're going to... It already drives me batty enough in Major League Baseball. But in Major League Baseball, those guys can do it. And those stadiums, they're used to those stadiums. They're not used to... The Vols are not used to the stadium. Max Herz sent me a text about how the average wall at Lindsey Nelson Stadium in Knoxville is 16 feet shorter than TD Ameritrade. I've been to TD Ameritrade. I've covered the College World Series. You are not going to launch the ball out of that ballpark with any consistency. You may have a guy get into one, but you are not going into that stadium for 2 weeks and hitting home runs. You are not going to hit your way through that tournament. In Rosenblatt, the old stadium in Omaha, you could definitely hit your way through that tournament. You cannot hit your way through this. It's like I got into an argument with Joe Rexroad on Saturday night. Because Joe, you know, the home run, the last pitch Rocker threw was a belt-high fastball, which guys in the game will call it a certain thing I can't say on the radio. But Joe was like, oh, Rocker hung one there. I'm like, hung one? The guy hit, you can't hang a fastball. The guy hit it to the moon. And I'm like, you don't hit that ball out of that park on a hanging pitch in that stadium. And Joe was like, oh, no, it's not like it's impossible to hit home runs there. It's not. Did you see the home run the kid for Virginia hit yesterday off a hanging breaking ball? Chad Dallas, like, just lobbed one right over, and the kid took it, and it was a great story because his dad had never seen him play, and his dad had just gotten over cancer, and it was a great story on Father's Day. That left in the first row. It's hard to hit the ball out of that stadium. So I see the Vols, and I see, you know, the new age of baseball is strike three, base hit, ball four, every at bat. That's what they want in the game. And Theo Epstein and all these guys in Major League Baseball are trying to get that out because it's bad. I think the Vols are trying to play that way. And I'm just telling you, you are not going to Omaha and going to hit your way out of that stadium. And I wonder, you know, he heard right there, I had a lot of at-bats where he didn't feel conviction, or a lot of pitches, he felt like he didn't feel conviction. To me, that's a buzzword. That's not really how you win baseball. So I look at the baseball analytics. I look at what the Vols team has built themselves into, and I wonder if this is the problem. If TD Ameritrade, which since the day it opened, I believe 2011 was its first year, was a total market correction on the game of baseball. And I do wonder if that effect has hurt the Vols or hurt them yesterday in playing in a park that they're not used to that is 16 feet deeper than the stadium they're used to. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Let's get to your phones. Text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Caroline Fenton's on that. What do we have?
One texter texted in and said, I love college baseball because it feels like the NFL playoffs. Every single game matters. It feels like the NBA and NHL just lasts too long.
So college baseball is going to feel like it lasts too long. I mean, Omaha is, I used to think about this for fans. I don't know how the hell a fan plans to go celebrate their team at the College World Series. Because going there, it's like 2 weeks. It's like 2.5 weeks long. That being said, losing the first game in that tournament is very unforgiving. The one thing that college baseball is that is different than almost every other sport is there are layers to losing and how you lose. In hockey, basketball, Major League Baseball, I mean, those are all best of series. So there's not a lot of depth to it when it matters when you lose or when you win. I guess like if you're down 2-0 and you lose game three, statistically, it makes it really hard to go back out and win your way through that. But in college baseball, if Vanderbilt wins tonight and then loses the next game, they're still fine. If Vanderbilt loses tonight, they're in trouble. If Vanderbilt lost Saturday night, they're done for. There are many layers in these regionals, but especially in Omaha, of when you lose. And the reason that it's such a big deal is because when you're playing a regional and it's Presbyterian and Indiana State and Chicago Institute of Technology, Tech, like when you're playing those teams, you can lose a game and you can get your way out of it. When you have to play Texas, it's a little different. What's next?
Matt texted in and said, let's just face it, the Vols are either 1 or 1,000 on big games on the line, dating back to the days of Peyton Manning.
So I think that's kind of ridiculous. I mean, I think every time that you're in a big game, it's totally binary.
Yeah.
Either you're going to win it or you're going to lose it. I mean, I've seen the Vols go into big games and get absolutely annihilated. I've seen the Vols have big games where they were the favorite and lose, like when they lost to LSU in the SEC championship game in 2001. I've seen the Vols as underdogs. Bruce Pearl was coaching in basketball. I've seen him win unbelievable games. I mean, I think, again, it's totally binary. And unlike the Atlanta Falcons, eventually you have to get one. You know, I mean, it's like we can sit there and talk about Doc Rivers and how much he's a loser. Remember, Doc Rivers did win an NBA title. He got to another one. Like, there, you know, it's not, again, it's completely binary here. So to say, oh, the Vols are either going to win the big game or they're going to lose the big game, that's sports.
And I think it's so easy to say that as a fan because it just kind of confirms this bias that you may have on the line, like in your mind, like, you know, let's say your team loses a game. Sure. Oh, we always do that. We always blow a lead sure. in the ninth inning. No, you don't. I understand how it feels that way.
I've talked about how I don't want my kids to root for the Titans whenever I have them. And it's because of the painful experiences that I've had in my life as a fan of the Titans. And I say that tongue-in-cheek, like in jest. Like, I mean, deep down inside, I hope my kids root for the Titans. And I'll be surprised if they don't root for the Titans. But I say that because the Titans have screwed so many things up. Floyd used to always tell me, you do know that happens to every team. And I'm like, well, but, like, you know, the ball bounces off of Drew Bennett's hands and they lose a playoff game at New England. And that happens to every team.
And it's so unfortunate. It feels like when it's your team that it's just the whole world is crumbling. But
it happens to every team.
It can happen to every
team. And I will say this, too, about Tennessee fans. Like, a lot of 7 teams leave Omaha not winning. Like, you're not going to be the first. Tim Corbin at Vanderbilt, when he got to his first College World Series almost a decade into his tenure as the coach, by the way, didn't get to Omaha with the best team in the country with David Price. When they got to Omaha, they lost the first time. Like, it takes time. It's a hard. Like, that's the thing I try to explain to people, and I know everyone's like, okay, yeah, it's hard. Every sport's hard. It is hard. The NBA, when you have the best players, normally is not hard. This is hard. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Mini camps are over in the NFL, but apparently ESPN has a breakdown of all the players who stood out. Why one was eye-rollingly laughable, And another, as far as the Titans concerned, was a little surprising. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game, or streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Was it just meetings today? Did you do something else to kind of wrap up minicamp? And how did this off-season program go with, after having virtual off-season a year ago?
We ran. We met and we ran, and then we, met with the players, and then they worked their way out of here. So we didn't do any bowling or any golfing or any skeet shooting. We just went out, ran, and tried to show them where we were conditioning wise, and where we feel like we need to be when we come back for training camp. And then to compare, there's really nothing to compare to from last year. Teresa, obviously, that where it wasn't a program, so we have to be well ahead of where we were last year with some of the younger players that are coming into our program for the first time and not getting that at training camp.
There you go. That was Vrabel. Last week they ran, saw where they were conditioning-wise, sent them home. Titans players are home. The rookies are still here, but the Titan players are at home. The mini camp is over, and they are not back on the field for another month and, 6 days. So everybody's going on vacation, and everybody should. But ESPN put together the surprise player of every minicamp. And you can go right to it's division by division, and each person who covers that team is the one who lays out who are the most impressive people or surprise people at these minicamps. So for the Texans, who didn't have a minicamp, which why the Texans didn't have a minicamp is beyond me, but Charles Omenihu, a defensive lineman, was the most impressive player there. Okay.
Great. Wonderful.
Jacksonville, Laviska Shenault Jr. Now, I will say this. I'm a little worried. Not right now, but in the future, I'm a little worried about Jacksonville at wide receiver because they got DJ Chark, who I think is pretty good, and they got Shenault, who I think is pretty good, and they signed Marvin Jones Jr., who I thought the Titans should go after. So,
maybe Travis Etienne, if he is a wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, whatever there. But, again, Laviska Shenault is pretty good. The Colts.
I knew you'd love this.
Carson Wentz. Mike Wells writes, how Wentz looked on the field wasn't the only important part of the offseason equation for the Colts' new starting quarterback. The other part was how he would fit in with his teammates after reportedly not having a great relationship with his teammates while with the Philadelphia Eagles. The transition, according to those inside the organization, has been a smooth one. Naeem Hines said, quote, he comes in and asks about my family, my sister, and things like that. As a new guy, it's pretty cool. It shows that he's caring and trying to take care of us. We'll stop right there for a second. We'll get to that. Again, he asked about his kids. And Wentz on the field, he has turned a lot of heads so far. He really has a pretty deep ball, Naeem Hines said. I've liked everything I've seen from him so far. First of all, Naeem Hines does not play wide receiver, so the idea that Carson Wentz has a really good deep ball where nobody's wearing any pads and nobody's covering anybody and no one's really doing any tackling and the Colts didn't have a mini camp, that is over here. The off-the-field stuff with Carson Wentz. I always love this in sports. And sometimes the Titans are a little guilty of this too. And the Predators are certainly guilty of this. And it is this weird thing that happens in sports that I don't totally get, which is we know so-and-so has a bad reputation for this. So now we're all going to go out of our way to show you that bad reputation is not realistic because of this. Like the people in Philadelphia, the players, multiple players over multiple seasons didn't believe in Carson Wentz because he was a baby, not because he asked about their kids or didn't ask about their kids. I have no idea how Ryan Tannehill relates to the Titan players as far as off the field is concerned. But I know what he does on the field that gets them to believe in him. When he takes on two tacklers jumping up into the end zone for a touchdown against Jacksonville. When he sacrifices his body by putting the ball out and exposing his throwing shoulder against the Lions. I see that. I think that is what stands out. Now, the Titans' most surprising player at minicamp was somewhat of a surprise, but not a surprise if you listen to this show in the TD Power Hour, since TD is the one who wrote this, but he wrote quarterback DeShone Kizer. Now, I've heard mixed reviews on Kizer. I've heard some people say, hey, if something happens to Tannehill, the Titans are screwed, which I would agree with, even though I like Kizer, and we were on the same celebrity softball team together, and he's a good dude. But TD writes, the backup quarterback position is like insurance. You don't realize how important it is until you need to use it. Kizer has looked good in OTAs and minicamp, especially when ripping throws on mid-range routes across the middle. He spent most of his time with the Titans last year as a quarantine quarterback, working only with quarterback coach Pat O'Hara. His quick decision-making in OTAs and minicamp is evidence that he has gained a strong grasp of the playbook. Kizer's skill set is very similar to Ryan Tannehill's, and that he can make most of the throws and is adept at making plays on the move. The fifth-year veteran is ready to compete with incumbent backup Logan Woodside. Do we think DeShone Kizer should be the backup quarterback of the Titans? I mean, the one thing I will say is Logan Woodside has continuously gotten crapped on for 2 years. That even though he never played a preseason game, and outside of a fake punt last year, he never played a meaningful snap. He has never played a meaningful snap of Titans football. And yet, I think there are a lot of fans out there that look at Logan Woodside and they're like, eh. And I will admit, Logan Woodside is really small. And I've been to practices. I've seen preseason games that he's played in, or I don't think he played a preseason game with the Titans. I have seen him play in the AAF. And now he threw some rockets in the AAF. But I think when I went to practice last year during COVID, I thought he looked terrible. And so I look at DeShone Kizer. Kid was a big-time quarterback at a big-time school, was a second-round pick at Cleveland, not the first guy to go to Cleveland and be set up to fail, spent a year, I believe, in Green Bay, has kind of been around, understands the system. Again, that year in Green Bay will teach you this system. He's bigger. He looks more the part of the quarterback with his size. We know he's got a good arm. He was a high pick. I mean, like, naturally, I kind of lean towards Kizer over Woodside, and I just don't think it's fair, since I haven't seen a single snap this season at camp or anything, for me to say that. But I do think I naturally lean towards Kizer over Woodside. And I do think it's an important question, because I think people care about the backup quarterback position. But again, that was who TD said was the most surprising at training camp, was DeShone Kizer. So we'll keep an eye on the backup quarterback battle, since I will say this. Everybody, we got preseason games back this year. Everybody likes to talk about the backup quarterback, even though the Titans are praying and hoping that they don't have to use him. 615-737-1025. The starting quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. I think Tom Brady launched a rocket at both the Titans and Tannehill. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, ESPN 102.5 The Game.